It seemed that all Egypt had heard that Nefer-Seti had run the Red Road and was ordained in his kingship. Each day visitors from all over the country arrived in Galala. Some were the colonels and captains of the regiments that Trok and Naja had left to guard Egypt in their absence. Others were emissaries of the elders of the great cities along the Nile, Avaris and Memphis, Thebes and Aswan, and the high priests from the temples in those cities. Sickened and saddened by the tyrannies and excesses of Naja and Trok, and emboldened by their absence in Babylon so far to the east, they'd all come to swear allegiance to Nefer-Seti. "The populace of Egypt is ready to welcome you," the emissaries told him. "Our regiments will declare for you as soon as you step again onto the sacred soil and they see your face and know that the rumours of your survival are true," the captains assured him. Nefer and Taita questioned them keenly, demanding to know the muster of their regiments and their state of readiness. It soon became apparent that Trok and Naja had skimmed the cream of the regiments for their Mesopotamian adventure, and left only the reserve battalions, made up mostly of new recruits, the very young and untried, or the elderly nearing the end of their military lives, tired and unfit, already looking forward to the retirement and their little plot of land near the river, where they could sit in the sun and play with their grandchildren. "What of the chariots and horses?" Nefer asked the crucial question. The captains shook their grey heads and looked grave. "Trok and Naja stripped the regiments bare. Almost every vehicle went with them on the western road. They hardly left enough to patrol the eastern borders to discourage the Bedouin raiders from the desert. What about the workshops in Memphis, Avaris and Thebes?" Nefer wanted to know. "Each of them can turn out at least 50 chariots in a month." "As soon as horses are trained to pull them, they're sent to the east to join the army of the twin pharaohs in Babylon." Taita assessed this information. "The false prophets are fully aware of the threat we pose to their rear. They want to ensure that if the regiments they've left in Egypt rebel against them and declare for the true pharaoh of Nefer-Seti, they'll lack cavalry and chariots to be an effective force." "You must return to your regiments," Nefer ordered the officers. "We're too many in Galala already, and we're near the limits of our food and water. Do not allow any more vehicles or horses to leave Egypt. Keep your men in training, and equip the best of them with the new chariots as they become available. I'll come to you soon, very soon, and lead you against the tyrants." They left, praising his name, and with renewed assurances of their loyalty. "You dare not fulfil your promise to them prematurely. You can only return to Egypt with a powerful force under your command, well-trained and well-equipped," Taita advised Nefer. "These captains who have come over to you are good, loyal men, and I know you can count on them. However, there'll be many others who remain true to Trok and Naja, either in fear of the consequences when the false pharaohs return, or because they believe in their divine right to rule. Also, there'll be many who are undecided, but who will turn against you if they detect any weakness." "Then we have much to do," Nefer accepted this advice. "We must still break the last of the horses we took at Tharna, and complete the repairs to the chariots from the dunes. Then our men must finish their training so that they can stand up against Trok and Naja's veterans. When we've done these things, we will return to Egypt." So the little army of Galala redoubled its efforts to build itself into a force to challenge the might of the false pharaohs. They were inspired by their young commander, for Nefer worked harder than any of them. He rode out with the first squadrons long before dawn, and with the other warriors of the Red Road at his side and Taita to advise him, he gradually forged his divisions into a cohesive body. When he rode back into the city, weary and dusty in the evening, he'd go to the workshops, where he cajoled and argued with the foremen, armourers, and chariot builders. Then, after he'd eaten, he would sit up in the lamplight with Taita, going over the battle plans and the dispositions of their forces. Usually it was after midnight when he stumbled to his bedchamber. Mintaka woke and rose from the bed without complaint, to help him strip off his armour and sandals, and to bathe his feet and massage aching muscles with sweet oils. Then she warmed a bowl of wine and honey to help him sleep. Often the bowl dropped from his hand before he'd finished it, and his head flopped back on the pillow. Then she'd slip out of her chiton, take his head onto her bosom, and hold him until he awoke to dawn's first promise.